Today's Friday, September 20th, 2019, and this week on the Shell and Tell podcast, Josh Jackson leads the team to a crushing win over the Orange. Josh Jackson falls apart in the trap game at Temple. But we look ahead as the team prepares for their Friday night matchup with the Lions. All this and more. Stay tuned. What's up, everybody, and welcome to episode 5 of the Shell and Tell podcast. Fred and Ryan here. It's been a couple of bipolar weeks for our Terps and the football team, man. It's been a roller coaster of emotions.
Yeah, two very different games we'll have to get into here. Obviously, we got Syracuse and Temple to cover. Two very different emotions for the true Terps fans watching these.
Hey, kid, man, flying high after a crushing win over the Orange. And then flying real low after falling into the trap game against Temple.
Can't even call that flying anymore.
Yeah, man, it was rough. Rough go, and we all kind of expected that things could end up going that way. I know that you were definitely concerned about that Temple game.
Yeah, I don't know if we all, but you and me definitely were. So there were lots of people out here overlooking Temple. There was a lot of talk, like, going right into Penn State. Most people had projections of us crushing Temple. I've seen this play too many times, and as you said, I did project this loss. I don't feel good about it that my record's now better than the Terps on projecting these wins and losses, but I kind of saw it coming.
Right. Well, we got to move on quickly as we've got a big matchup coming up next week at home, under the lights, Friday night lights, taking on Penn State and the Nittany Lions. I'm excited for that game.
Oh, I'm so excited, man. You don't even know. I don't even remember what that stadium looks like at night.
Oh, I know.
You know, if Damon Evans could get me a 3:30 game, I'd weep at his feet. I'm so sick of these noon games. I'm so sick of this sunburnt and just destroyed and
I know.
Heat stroke and watch people fall down because they can't stand the bulwark. Like, just give me a game. Plus, you can barely tailgate for a noon game. You get down there at like 6 a.m. and cook breakfast. It's terrible. 3:30 is perfect. It's my favorite game. Can I get one of those coming up here soon? You tailgate before. You sober up in the parking lot after. It's amazing.
Can I get an amen?
Come on, Damon. Get your stuff together and stop scheduling UConn. We'll get into that later.
Yeah, we got a lot to get into. All right, well, let's start at the beginning. Let's talk a little bit about the big win against Syracuse. I think you and I were pretty confident going into that game, but I don't think either one of us saw that kind of an ass-whooping coming.
No, man, nobody was going to see 63-20 against the number 21 team of the nation. No, you know, you had it at 28-24 Maryland, and I had it 24-17 Maryland. So we both picked the right team. We were both very low on us and pretty close on the Syracuse Orange there.
Right. So all you fans out there, you guys, there's no sense in beating a dead horse here. We all kind of know what happened in these two games. But let's take a kind of good, bad, and ugly approach from this. Just what we saw, what we liked about this game really quickly. And I think for me, the good, it's got to start with Josh Jackson in this game, right?
In that game, the good definitely started with Josh Jackson. Great timing with his right wide receivers, great decision making. The RPO looked like it was going to be the second coming of Maryland.
Yeah, and what I like to see out of it was obviously the play that he had and the chemistry that he had with the new tight end and Mabry. He's a guy I've been saying for weeks now that I'm high on, and it looks like they're starting to get a little bit of chemistry.
Yeah, the first touchdown there, grad transfer to grad transfer, kind of showing that Loxley's recruiting chops have helped us already.
Right. And then the running backs. I mean, we've seen a little bit of everybody in this game. We thought maybe we'd see Ant McFarland kind of take that next step because he didn't really play very much in the first game. You know, had a decent game, but still not the game that we expect from McFarland.
Well, we saw 4 out of 5 running backs contribute. Lolo Harrison was a little banged up with a hammy, so he didn't play. But everybody had a heavy usage, pretty equal across the board, 8 to 15 carries somewhere right in there. Actually, Jake Funk led in the yards per carry category, so interesting fact there.
Right.
But they all played, and I loved the touch at the stadium with Jake Funk, and he's got the funk. That's one of my favorite things they're doing this year with the music they're playing when he gets a big play.
I love it. So, all right, there really wasn't a whole lot of bad and ugly in this game, but if we're going to do this segment, we got to find what we can find in this game. And I guess the bad for me in this game had to be the corners. I mean, they just got beat one too many times on deep plays, one of which was a pick play, Could have been the flag thrown on that play. But nonetheless, that seems to be a little bit of an issue with this team.
Yeah, this defense did not get beat often during the Syracuse game, but right. When they did get beat, they got beat deep. So that's the thing we're picking on here. And a couple of the plays, I mean, there was a miracle catch on the sideline, and there were also some wide open receivers down the side.
And then the ugly in this game, it had to be some of the interceptions that were thrown in this game, not just by the Terps, by both teams in this game.
Yeah, both quarterbacks had an ugly interception, one apiece.
Yeah, you had Jordan Mosley getting the pick off of
DeVito. Or as I said last week, who cares?
He tried throwing to a ball, to a receiver that was already out of bounds. I don't know
literally,
what.
Literally out of bounds and facing the bench and knowing he wasn't part of it. So yeah. He rolled to his right and then went to find his outlet receiver who had already been ran out of bounds by the cornerback and was literally walking at the water boy on the Maryland sidelines.
Mosley just turned around and was like, oh, shit, there's a football.
And the ball was in his lap. I mean, he literally threw it right to Mosley. I don't know what he was thinking at all.
It was great. And then you had Josh Jackson, an ill-advised throw. I think he was just trying to force something that wasn't there. You know, the kind of thing I think that took me back on this interception was from the senior receiver. This ball was thrown to DJ Turner. Usually, you know, some of your veteran receivers would be savvy enough to come back to a ball like that. He didn't even attempt to come back.
Yeah, no comeback, which would have probably prevented at least the interception. I don't know if it would have been a completion, but if he would have came back to that ball, I don't think the cornerback could have got the angle to get in there. But it still was a really risky throw backed up in your own end zone to take. So a little bit of blame go both ways there, and that's why I put this in the ugly is because either one of those players could have saved it, and neither one of them did.
But at the end of the day, we left that stadium flying high. Me, a little sun poisoned from all the sun.
I'm trying to tell you, man, that bowl noon games are a killer.
It is rough.
Damon, stop scheduling noon games.
It is rough.
You're giving my co-host skin cancer. We got to keep this going.
That does not happen to me at the Ravens games. The sun is behind me, so I don't have to worry about that.
Yeah. That 1 hour difference, that 1 p.m., yep. Oh, it saves us.
It's a huge difference. But nonetheless, Terps win big in that game, 63-20, and then it's preparation time for Temple, which I know a lot of us, like I said, had some concerns about it just because of the stumbling block that we had last year with them, kind of maybe looking past them, hoping that we wouldn't make the same mistake twice. We can't do it 2 years in a row, can we?
I was hopeful that we could not make that same mistake twice, but I just had this feeling we would. So Fred had it 27-24 projection,
yep.
And I had it 24-21 Temple. I told you last week you'd stop calling me a homer. I'm going to tell you this week you can start calling me a realist because I nailed that. It was a 3-point differential. I was 3 points high a little bit there,
yeah,
or 4 points high, but it was a 3-point differential for the Terps. Even with a cheap little safety at the end, but I'm going to take credit that it was the right point spread.
So this was just really, it was an ugly game all around for the Terps.
Yep, 17-20 Temple.
There really wasn't anything to hang your hat on really in this game. So let's do the same thing, man. Let's take a good, bad, and ugly approach with this. Let you start. Let's start with the ugly because yep. It was entirely, the whole thing was ugly. I can only imagine where you're going
to
start.
This game, you can't do good, bad, ugly. You got to do ugly, bad, good. That's all there is to it.
Right.
All right, so ugly. Ugly was the special teams, really for both teams. So there was a muffed punt, a safety on a bad long snap. These were both by Temple.
Yeah.
A missed field goal by Maryland causing injury to Joseph Petrino. Then a fake field goal where you put your injured kicker out there as a decoy.
Which I didn't know he was hurt until after the game.
No one knew. That's why they thought they were going to surprise them. But there was no blocking.
No.
It was the worst fake field goal I've ever seen in my life. There were like three guys unblocked.
Yeah.
Your holder, who is your backup kicker, a.k.a. the guy that's supposed to be kicking right now, was not going to outrun three unblocked defenders. It was the most mind-blowing thing I'd seen.
Yeah.
And then a 6-yard punt by Temple out of their end zone to give us one last glimmer of hope in this game.
Oh, man, there were so many times in this game I thought, all right, we're playing like shit, but somehow we're going to come out with a win. DJ Turner with the return all the way down inside the 10. You and I talked about it. Even then, neither one of us felt confident we were going to get in.
No, you know what? The same thing leaked into my TV watching last night. So Houston, Tulane were playing, mm-hmm. And I watched Houston intercept the ball and run shit at the 4-yard line. And I had this immediate feeling of, oh, you blew it. You can't possibly.
You're never going to score.
You can't possibly score now. But unlike Maryland, they put it in on the first try.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's still burnt into my psyche.
And then the bad, which really, I mean, it could be ugly no matter how you look at it, in my opinion, was Josh Jackson in this game. As high as we were on him in those first two games, as great as he looked in those first two games, he looked terrible in this game.
Oh, completely off. And I mean, I know there was bad line play in this game, but that was, it seemed very much separate. Yes, bad line play can speed up a clock in a QB's head and affect him on other plays.
Right.
But many of his big mistakes were on completely clean pockets.
Right.
And a lot of the things that we praised him for, especially in the Howard game, was his ability to throw on the run. He showed zero ability to throw on the run. If he was walking in this game, he was missing a guy by 5 yards.
Well, he was 15 to 38 for 183 yards, one TD, and one interception. I mean, he was at like a 40%
clip.
He's lucky
to have those stats.
It was incredible. And the thing was, it wasn't like he was missing guys a little. I mean, these throws were nowhere near the mark.
I mean, the first time in the red zone, we got, we're at the 18. Anthony McFarland ran 15-yard play to the 3-yard line to give us first and goal.
Right.
First and goal from the 3, very first play. He's booting out right. And there's a guy kinda in his face, but like he ran towards that player. So you should be able to prepare, take the right angle. You got Demas wide open, your biggest wide receiver, like seriously 8 yards wide open in the end zone, and he throws it 10 feet over his head. Like any touch, instead of throwing a line drive to the third row of the stands, and you start with a touchdown. And instead, we turn it over on downs because we go for it on fourth down there at the goal line.
Right. I mean, you can't put all of the blame on Josh Jackson. Obviously, he played like crap. But beyond that, the offensive line was just overmatched and dominated in the trenches all game long. And
especially
really,
in the red zone.
And especially in the red zone, for sure. But they didn't give him much time at all. And, you know, dealing with this all game. And then Terrence Davis goes down with the injury. And now he's going to be out 4 to 6 weeks. And you got Ellis McKinney stepping in. Didn't do a very good job in his first showing.
Yeah, I mean, Ellis McKinney has been in and out of the lineup because he's our little Swiss Army knife. As Coach Locke says, he can play all 5 positions.
Right.
So for right now, he will be the fill-in there. If somebody else, God forbid, goes down, he may be moving somewhere else. They said Austin Fontaine will be the next up in that position.
Right.
And that's kind of interesting to me, too, because, you know, me and you talked a couple episodes earlier that they moved Brandon Gaddy to the offensive side of the ball, 4-star lineman. You would think that the plan would have been to have him closer to a starting rotation if you're going to make that kind of move.
Right.
So now you're telling me he plays guard. So now you're telling me he was fourth in line for guard play. So right. Why did we make that move? But I mean, Locks makes the big bucks. I trust the guy. He hasn't really let me down yet, but it just seems confusing.
And then I think another part of this goes to, you mentioned all the goal line stops and everything that went wrong in the goal line and inside the 10-yard line. I think part of that has to be attributed to the play calling.
Yeah, let's run it to the right or run to the left, right up the center's butt. Yeah, that's a good idea. Left, right, oh, turn the ball over.
Well, the other thing that kind of threw me for a loop here is we've talked on the show a few times, the power and the strength of a guy like Teyon Fleet Davis. We didn't see him at all in goal line formation. It was McFarland the entire time. I don't know. It's just me, but I would have liked to have seen a little bit of a change.
Well, that goes to one of my other bads here, just player usage, period. I mean, Anthony McFarland had 26 carries. What? Yeah. In what? Who saw at the beginning of the year with our depth at running back that we were going to have an Ezekiel Elliott-type 26-carry running back? One of the things at the Big Ten media days that Ant McFarland said that he loved about this system was the less usage, was the fact that he would be fresh and have less wear and tear on his body coming out of college. Not with 26 carries a game, you aren't. Right. So apparently your coach did not watch that media interview.
Right.
Or just disagree with you wholeheartedly. Or maybe he just told you to lie to everyone and we'd surprise him. But why are we surprising him against Temple then?
Yeah, that makes no sense.
It does make zero sense. We have so many good running backs. And, you know, Locksley was offended when he was asked the same question at the press conference about would you have used a bigger back in that situation if you could do it again? And he said, Anthony McFarland is our best short yardage back. Anthony McFarland's good at short yardage. And we saw in that Syracuse game, he deadlifted like three dudes pushing
Yeah, I'm not saying he's not strong at all.
I'm not saying he's not. And Anthony McFarland is by far your best athlete on the team.
100%.
I'm just not so certain he's your best short yardage running back. To specifically say that, you got big boys. I mean, Jake Funk played fullback.
Right.
The idea of 1 yard is kind of what a fullback was made for.
Right.
Or at least put him in and let him knock one of these linebackers back. I mean, even when they went in the second half, they put in 2 running back set, which did help a lot, that we drove right downfield and scored. That's when Terrence Davis got injured, was that during that drive. They put in 2 running backs flanking Jackson. But every play fake went to the guy that never carries the ball.
Right.
I was watching it today. Why are you play faking to Fleet Davis, who has 0 carries? No one's biting on that play fake.
He hasn't touched the ball.
Play fake to McFarland. If you're going to play fake, give the ball to Fleet Davis. No one believes you.
Yeah. I don't know, man. There's just so much that went wrong in this game. And then we forgot to mention, too, the fact that in the red zone there, they did have an opportunity. The tight end found a wide open spot, and then Jackson overthrew the ball.
Yep, absolutely overthrew the ball. I mean, at multiple times, Jackson let it go, and Anthony McFarland got stuffed so many times. Now, 4th and 1 on the 4, Anthony McFarland did get it and then got the touchdown all at once.
Yeah.
But I swear, if we would have got the first down instead of the touchdown there, we would have got stuck again.
All right. Enough of the doom and gloom.
Oh, so sad.
Enough of the doom and gloom. Let's try to focus on some good. What can we take away from this game? I'll start it with, I think, my player that's kind of surprised me, and a guy that I know you didn't have extreme expectations for going into this season, but to me, he's done pretty damn good this year.
I told you he shut me up last week.
DJ Turner, for sure. I mean, he didn't have a huge game, but every play that he was affected in this game had a huge effect, or potential to affect.
It was 2.
Right. Well, it almost was 3.
It was almost three.
So he had the 1 catch for 19 yards, but I mean, he was carrying defenders with him broke multiple tackles and gained an extra 15 yards out of what would have been a short 4-yard gain in that. But then later on, we talked about it, the punt return, which was huge. To take that in a situation where your team needs you a little bit of pickup because the offense isn't doing anything, he did his job. He got the ball down inside the 5-yard line.
Yep, 55-yard return. He needed 59 for us to win the game because we cannot score in the red zone.
Right.
He got us down to the 4-yard line, and that's where we stayed.
And then the play that wasn't was the touchdown catch that unfortunately he was out of bounds.
Last play of the game went back to DJ Turner a little too late. He made the catch. But yeah, there was really no getting feet in bounds there. He needed to be hit a half second sooner. Yeah,
that was definitely not his fault at all. But I mean, he was in the right position at the right place at the right time, made the catch, just unfortunately out of bounds. And then obviously, I'll let you talk about it, Ant McFarland. I mean, statistically, yeah, we don't like to see him carrying 26 times, but he still averaged over 5 yards a clip.
Yeah, I mean, 136 yards, I think, is what he ended up with. You're going to get yards when you get 26 carries, like I said. But yeah, he is very impressive. And again, he is our best athlete. Still not the highest yards per carry average. Hasn't gotten that yet this year. which is very interesting. And again, I think we talk about this in basketball. When I go back to this, is kind of the Anthony Cowan comparison.
Right.
That a 80% Anthony Cowan is not as good as 100% of your backup point guards. So why would an 80% Anthony McFarland be better than 100% Javon Leak? It's my same thing. Like, why are we running this man to death when you have a very talented man? You called him 1B. You Loxley, right, said 1A, 1B. Well, 1A, 1B is not 26 and 8. So unless there's an injury to Leak that you're lying to us about, like you did the kicker with your little fake field goal, this is unacceptable. 1A, 1B is not 26 and 8.
I often wonder if it was just because he wasn't involved very much in the first 2 games. Maybe there was some frustration going on and he was trying to make his, bell cow running back a little happy. I don't know.
First half, that's fine. But when you get to that second half and you're putting 2 guys out there, I mean, and you're biting on him so hard. You can affect the game. You are great. The defense knows that.
Right.
So let's use it. Let's ball fake to you. Let's hit leak in the flat. Let's, you know, use it to our advantage. Let him boot out after he fakes it to McFarland. Don't fake it to Fleet Davis, who hasn't touched the ball.
Right. I completely agree. On the defensive side of the ball, I thought a guy that stood out to me in this game is a guy that we haven't talked about at all. And I think a guy that kind of flies under the radar, definitely with us anyway, it's got to be sophomore linebacker Chance Campbell.
Yep, last time we talked about him was our defensive preview episode right. A long time ago. Haven't talked about him in actual gameplay. And he was all over that field and
had a
big-time interception that, again, gave us a chance. There were people that put hope in Maryland's heart. Now, Chance Campbell and DJ Turner were pretty much the only ones doing that on our team, but their punter and their long snapper and Temple just kept trying to give us hope.
Oh, I know. We had every opportunity to
win
this
opportunity.
But Chance, I mean, at 6'2", 225, I mean, this kid, he was all over the field. Like you said, he's a sure tackler. You know, he ended up coming up with the big interception. I thought he had a really, really good game.
Yeah, and then what we warned you of, we got to put in the good too. We got to give Temple a little credit here.
Off to him.
You know, we told you that Russo was a very experienced quarterback. Was a very experienced quarterback, that they had a lot of returning players, that they were a bowl eligible team 5 out of the last 6 seasons. Russo showed why we were so scared of him. He threw indefensible balls.
Yeah, well, see, in the first half, he didn't really do a whole lot.
First touchdown, even though it was not covered well,
right?
You can put the world's best coverage on that player, and he is catching that touchdown. That he dropped in a bucket right in stride at the goal line. Yeah. You could have been draped over that man. It's a touchdown.
I felt like they played conservative, though, in the first half. Being that Maryland wasn't running away with anything and that their defense was playing a real strong game, I felt like they played conservative football in the first half. But they came out guns blazing in the second half, and Russo was attacking this secondary deep down the field. And I tell you what, Tino Ellis, for as much credit as we give him, did not have a good football game. I mean, he was draped all over his guy. I think the guy he was guarding was like 6'5". You know, Tino Ellis isn't a small guy. He's like 6'1". When you got a 6'5" defender, or a wide receiver, you're going to look small. And he was doing everything he could to just try to keep him in check and hold on to him.
Yeah, and if that first touchdown by Russo wasn't impressive enough, once the guns were blazing, like you said, he then later threw a even better pass with a deep curl. Wide receiver had the ball in his lap before he even turned.
Right.
So he turns around Antoine Brooks, and literally as he puts his shoulder back, that ball's there. And I honestly think that's why Antoine Brooks fell, is he was so shocked that it like blew by his face on that turn. And he falls, and the wide receiver just jogs to the end zone. I mean, it seemed like I could have caught that touchdown and went for it all the way down.
Well, look, this was a game that we, like I said, we kind of had a fear could be a trap game, but Temple's a good football team, and they've proven that now 2 years in a row against us. They were 8-5 last year, 7-1 in the AAC. I mean, they've been bowling, 5 out of the last 6 years?
Yeah, wouldn't we like to do that?
Yeah.
I mean, I know their conference gives them a bunch of free wins, but that's they're not just playing easy conferences. They're playing Georgia Tech this year. They play UCF.
Right.
I mean, they play us. We'll see how good that is. We'll see.
And like we talked about before, I mean, I think they're one of the more experienced teams in college football. They had 7 returning starters on offense, 6 on defense. Russo comes in after a pretty decent year last year and just elevates his game to the next level. This could be a team that could end up being ranked this week.
Yeah, I mean, they may only lose to UCF on the schedule, I'm telling you. Like, and I'll be watching that UCF Temple game with anticipation because I don't know. Again, Russo didn't show it early, but he showed the capability to light somebody on fire.
Right.
And he obviously did the week one for them.
Right.
And this defensive front 7 was way better than that Syracuse defensive front 7 that we kept hearing about all over the news.
Agreed.
So they could make waves.
Right.
And they're going to play Buffalo tomorrow. While you guys are listening to this, you might already know the result of this Buffalo game. But I'll be very interested to see if Temple's result against Buffalo is better than Penn State's result against Buffalo was.
Good transition, Ryan. Speaking of Penn State, Penn State comes to town this coming Friday. The 3-0, 13th-ranked Penn State, Nittany Lions. It's going to be an exciting game. It's what everybody wants us to talk about. It's what everybody wants to hear about. Nobody's wanting to focus on the past. Let's let this Temple game go and get our shit together for Penn State.
Yeah, Penn State is going to be fun. Whether we win or lose, it's going to be fun. I'm going to be there at 2 to 3 p.m. tailgating as they have closed the campus down.
We are going
to
be there.
Yeah, we. I guess I'll let you be there. No, of course. We are tailgating together. Yeah. Be there around 3 p.m. in Lot 4B, tailgating it up, getting it ready. Again, thank you for not having a noon game. Noon on a Friday would be the only thing worse than the traffic for this.
Right. Well, the bye week, I guess, couldn't have come at a better time after, you know, the shellacking that we had up in Temple. We got a whole week to prepare for this, but so do they. They're on a bye week this week as well.
Isn't that unfortunate? I was so excited to have a bye week before Penn State, and then look at their schedule. It's like, it's kind of a wash.
It doesn't give anybody a competitive advantage at all. Look, the university is doing everything that they can to try to boost this game. You know, they're trying to get the students involved. They're bringing more bleachers in for this game to try to pack the house, get it as loud as possible. What did you think of that?
Well, let me tell you, any students that are listening to this, please share this with all your friends, because I'd like to challenge this.
And band members.
And band members. But yeah, if anyone follows on Twitter, somehow we got into a little tiff with the band. I was not trying to offend everyone. I love the band. Again, as I tweeted, one of my best memories at Maryland football was the very first time that they busted out Thriller at halftime at a Halloween game.
That's
it was
awesome.
They all dropped their instruments and 300 people were doing the Thriller dance midfield. It was sweet. By the way, they did it a couple years later and only some of you put your instruments down and danced. X-nay that. All dance or nobody dances. So back to how we got into this. Penn State was all hyped up pre-Temple. We all got a little, well, not we all, because again, me and you kept saying trap game. But right. A lot of people got ahead of themselves saying we're going to be 3-0 going into Penn State. We need all ticket requests.
Hey, I was one of them. I said we were going to be 4-0.
I know. But all ticket requests had to be in before that Temple game. So 14,500 ticket requests were taken. It's only 10,000 seats in the stadium. So then everybody that's a fan there said, we have to get all 14,500 people in here. And, you know, I was one of them, but I kind of saw this coming now. So we have lost a Temple. I'll be real interested if all those people that asked for tickets show up with their tickets.
I think they will. It's a Friday night game. It's under the lights. If this was a regular noon game like you were talking about before, probably not. I think with it being on national TV and it being a weekend night, I think you'll see a lot of the fans.
I'm hopeful, but I'm just saying, students and band members who are students, yes, you're right. You corrected me on that, even though I never said you were not students. I need you all to show up with these tickets. Fill these stadiums. They got the extra 1,100 students with these three bleachers at the top of the stands here. So we already have extra student sections available now. So if you win this lottery, that it's still a lottery, you're still lucky. There's still 2,500 to 3,000 people that are not getting tickets that they wanted. Use your ticket. Right. Show up before kickoff. Stay till at least the fourth quarter. God, what are you doing at halftime? I don't know what you guys are doing. Just please come to the game.
I just want to be a part
of it. I need you there. I need you to show up and show what Maryland can be. Because if you want a winning team, you know, yes, we lost a Temple, but they have not lost for you yet. They have protected this house. I was there for the first run with Ralph, where we invented the Protect This House, where it had been years without watching a loss. And it's an amazing thing to watch.
Yeah.
So please come here, support our boys. Let's try to pull it out and get these wins at home to get bowl eligible.
Well, Ryan, I've got faith. I got faith in our students. I think they show up. I think it's going to be a loud environment. It's going to be tough for Penn State to get comfortable. But, you know, I can't go without saying, you mentioned Ralph Friedgen. Ralph is going to be at the game there Friday night. They're going to honor Ralph. Ralph and Loxley obviously go back many, many years ago. Friedgen actually asked Loxley before he took the New Mexico job to come back to Maryland at one point and ended up going to New Mexico instead. Didn't work out very well for him. Friedgen, I think there were still some negative vibes in the way that they handled him and his dismissal, that he hasn't been back here. I think he's only been back here like a handful of times, four or five times since that's happened. It'll be good to see him back.
Obviously Lox is trying to heal those wounds, and they should be healed, and Ralph was done wrong. I can still remember The very last bowl game, because we went to a bowl the year he was fired.
I know.
Wouldn't we like to be back in a bowl? Why are we firing a coach like that?
Right.
So we were at against East Carolina in FedEx Field, I think it was, or one of those old Redskin stadiums. And so I stayed and after the game, watched him and the team sing the song, the fight song and everything. And it was like a really emotional moment because you could like see like, this was a man being put out.
Yep.
It was not a man that wanted to leave. He loved his job. He loved being there with those kids, and they put him out. And, you know, obviously it does take a lot to bring it back. But, again, Locks and him have been stride for stride. Loxley gives a lot of his credit for his offense to Ralph Regan, always very publicly, as he is a big part of building this offense.
Right.
And so he's the right guy to heal these wounds. I saw Torrey Smith, Maryland Terrapin, who just retired from the NFL, also said he's going to be in the house to, yeah. You know, show his support for Friedgen because he obviously played during that era. So
I'm sure
cool.
We'll see the Henderson brothers there as well. I got a feeling we'll see a lot of the greats, you know, through the 90s and early 2000s.
Yeah, but you got to come see, you know, show support to your coach that like got you through that. Absolutely.
For sure. But let's talk a little bit about this game and what to expect. You know, Penn State has kind of been a slow starting team in most of their games. Obviously, the first game of the year, they mollywopped Idaho. I think it was like 79-0 or 79-10, something like that. But these last two games against Buffalo and then the in-state rival against
Pittsburgh.
Pitt. Yeah, I mean, both first halves in these games, they looked flat and they did not look like a 13th ranked team to me.
Yeah, the way I like to say, undefeated but unimpressive. Sure, they beat Buffalo 13-45. But at the half, they trailed 7-10.
Yeah.
And then Pitt, they were lucky to be tied at halftime with a late field goal and ended up only squeaking that out 17-10. So one score game in that one. And again, they were the only thing that seemed to turn that Buffalo game around was them breaking the punter's leg.
Right.
All of a sudden, they went on a run. And I don't know if they just broke the soles of Buffalo when they broke his leg or if it just happened to be a coincidence.
They kept showing that replay over and over again. That was hard to watch.
It was very hard to watch.
So they bring in a quarterback, a young guy, sophomore quarterback, Sean Clifford. He's a dual threat quarterback, has the ability to beat you with his arms and his feet. He's got a little bit more athleticism than I think anybody that we've seen at the quarterback position as of yet.
I don't know. Kalen Newton was supposed to be it.
Yeah, that team was atrocious.
Yeah, on paper, Kalen Newton looked like a real fire. So hopefully we get the same results as that.
We'll see. this kid can run with the best of them as far as like scrambling quarterbacks and mobile quarterbacks. He hasn't thrown any interceptions this year. He's been pretty efficient. His completion percentage isn't great. It's at like 58-59%. But you know, he's 44-75 for 781 yards on the season with 6 touchdowns and no interceptions. It's a pretty good start.
It's a pretty good start. You know, so far we had one young quarterback and one very experienced quarterback. We did very well against DeVito, the young quarterback. So hopefully we can repeat that as well.
And he's got a good sophomore wide receiver out there to throw to, the speedster, KJ Stamler.
Yeah, and the way our cornerbacks have played, like I said, that's been one of our complaints. Tino's got to not be draped all over these guys. Can't be holding and no 15-yard penalties. And then Antoine Brooks, he's been played great. All his big plays are at safety. When he can play safety, he looks amazing. When he has to play in coverage, he looks average.
Yeah.
So we somehow got to make sure that doesn't happen.
Stamler at 5'9", 176 pounds. I mean, he's their big play guy. He averages over 24.5 yards per catch. This is a guy that if he gets beyond the defense, it's pretty much a wrap.
Yeah, why are we keep running into these guys? How is everyone averaging over a quarter of field? It just doesn't even make sense. Mathematically in my head, I don't know why everyone's averaging 25-29 yards a play.
Right.
You have to be at the right spot on the field to catch a ball to get that. I mean, Anthony McFarland has broken a bunch of runs for 20 yards, but the end zone stops it. It would have been a 100-yard run, but the end zone stops it.
Right.
These guys are lucky.
Well, look, this is going to be a tough team all around. They've got a very strong defense. We struggled against, obviously, the defensive front 7 with Temple. This is going to be a next-level opponent on that front 7. I mean, they've got a couple of defensive ends that are going to give our tackles fits all day.
Yeah, I mean, Locks got into it in his press conference. You know, he said whether it's fundamental or schematic, what the problems are. That's what he wanted to look at. And he said that 90% of the problems against Temple were all fundamentals. What he said, like, schematic versus fundamental, was that, were there enough men to block the defenders? Was the play call, or not the play calling, but the play design an issue, right? Or did somebody not do their job? And so it said most of the problems on last Saturday were fundamentals. They got an extra week to get into that. Talked a lot about how the training program would work and the extra days rest because it's early and things. So hopefully we'll get all those little things knocked in. But again, you're playing with a backup guard already. It's a whole new line now because it's, again, we talked, line is a team game. So you only get better when you're playing as a unit, whole new unit. So hopefully we get it figured out.
All right. And then on the offensive side of the ball for us, obviously, we want to see Josh Jackson clean his game up. He had a terrible game against Temple. We can't have that kind of repeat performance if we're going to expect to see this team win. He's got to play more like he did in Syracuse. And what do you think attributes to that? What do you think will be Josh Jackson's success in this game?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know what was wrong with Josh Jackson. He,
well, speaking of that, there were rumors going around.
I don't know if I want to get into rumors on our show, but I'm going to let you do it. Remember, I am the Terps season ticket holder, and I do not endorse what's about to be said here, but I'm going to let him do it.
I'm just saying there were rumors out there that he was out partying all night the night before that Temple game. I'm not 100% accurate. I'm just saying there was rumors going around.
Yeah, there's rumors, but, you know, we're in this group chat is where these rumors came from. Diehard Maryland fans, good guys, but they're also a little hot-headed at times, yeah. So I don't know. Maybe they heard from one other drunk guy that said that, and now it's like fact. So I don't know. It could be completely real. And if it is, that is super disappointing. A guy that's supposed to be a veteran leader and a guy that was getting NFL talk earlier that week, to underestimate an opponent like that is embarrassing. But again, that is just rumor.
Yeah.
That only some people have heard. I'm going to go ahead and assume that didn't happen, because if that did happen, then just don't get drunk the night before and all our problems are fixed and we're going to win the national title. But I really doubt that's what happened.
Yeah.
So outside of that, I mean, again, it's a lot of it was timing. A lot of it was decision making. Coach Locks talked about, you know, making the right reads on the safeties and stuff. So back to fundamentals for him again, because maybe he just got a little too hot-headed. Maybe he thought he was untouchable because he was getting ESPN coverage. He was getting talked about in NFL conversations. None of that talk's happening this week, man. So you got to put some points on the board. You got to look better for 3 or 4 more weeks before they start talking about that again, because you embarrass yourself.
I agree. And I think with the running backs, I want to see them get back to more of the balanced attack as far as the, you know, spreading the ball around. I want to see Javon Leak more involved. You know, he's had that big play threat. I mean, he's averaging over 7 yards a carry this year. Didn't see him at all really last week.
Yep, and I'm okay with Andy McFarlane getting 26 carries if Javon Leak has 20. So you better figure that out. You better, there's no reason to run that man to the ground, number one, even if he is your best player. And you gotta spread that love.
Well, look, nonetheless, this is the number 13 team in the country coming in next Friday. I don't know.
I mean, if you told me the 13th best, definitively 13th best team in the nation was coming in this week, we don't have a chance in hell. Right. We're not in the top 13 teams in this nation. But this is not a top 13 team either, in my estimation. So they are perpetually overrated. They're in this group of preseason ratings with Texas and Notre Dame and Penn State and Oregon in the recent history, that they're given the benefit of the doubt. Basically, there's teams that have to prove they're good, and there's other teams that have to prove they're bad.
Right.
And those teams I just listed are always in the top 10 to start the year and almost never in the top 10 to end the year.
But wait, I mean, they got Saquon Bark. Oh, no.
No, he's gone now.
But what? Wait, they got Trace Mix.
No. Oh, he's on the Ravens.
Oh, no, he's gone. But wait a minute. But my Miles Sanders. No.
Oh, Miles Sanders is also on my fantasy team. I guess. Why? Why? Yes, they are a good team. They recruit well. They replace. They did have those 2 running backs back to back. I'm sure they got another NFL running back somewhere on this roster.
Right.
But what have they shown to be number 13 in the nation? We already talked. Yeah, they beat a nobody team. So did we. They then almost lost, or they didn't almost lose to Buffalo because of the score, but they're behind at half at Buffalo.
Right.
They squeak out a win at Pittsburgh. If we had the exact same results they did against those teams, we wouldn't be in the top 25 because we haven't proved anything yet.
And I agree with you, but if we play like we did against Temple, we will lose this
game. Oh, we will lose amazingly to this game. It'll be 6-65. But I'm hoping we do not play like we did against Temple.
100% agree. So, all right, well, speaking of that, let's kind of talk a little bit about our predictions then with this game. I'll let you lead off. Again, it's a Friday night game. You got the students pumped. The stadium's loud. They're coming out the shell under the lights for the first time. What do you see happening in this game?
I see lights on, and I love it. And I'm hoping the crowd's there. I hope you're right, and they fill that stadium.
I think they will.
And I know Section 7's going to have it going. Sure. I know we're going to be loud.
Absolutely.
And in that bench, and I think the final score is 28-24. Maryland.
Nice.
And I keep my 4-0 record and they go to 3-1.
All right. I saw the Terps being 4-0. I did see them beating Penn State, and I'm not going to change that even after the loss against Temple. I do think this team wins. I think this team wins behind the running backs. I don't think Josh Jackson is what everybody was hyping him up the first 2 weeks. I think he had a great game against Syracuse. I don't think he's as bad as he was against Temple, but I think he's somewhere in the middle. I don't think he's as good as he was against Syracuse, and I don't think he's as bad as he was in Temple. But I think in this game, two things. Terps are going to try to control time of possession, and the way you do that is by running the ball and keeping the clock running because they want to limit the amount of possessions that Penn State has. And I think ultimately that's how the Terps win in this game. But I do think they go to the balanced attack. And I do think that we see Ant McFarland. I do think we see Javon Leak, Tavon Fleet Davis. I think we see them all have big games in this game. I think the Terps win this one 27-24.
We have almost the exact same score predictions. I like it.
I like listened to you, but I didn't listen to you.
I said 28-24.
27-24. I like it. All right, well, this starts an important stretch of games for the Terps. I mean, you've got five games that are going to play a crucial part in whether this team goes bowling or not this year. You've got, obviously, this big game against Penn State, which we all want, I think, for personal reasons in some ways. Then you've got Rutgers, Purdue, Indiana, and Minnesota. All winnable games. We're sitting at two wins right now. To be bowling, we only need four. So we got to win four out of the next five. How do you see these next five games shaking out? Do you think we get there in these five?
I'm looking at these games and I'm thinking as of right now, we get four out of five. We lose to Purdue. I think we win the rest of the games. We're going to be at Minnesota, so I got to count that.
We're winning that game.
We're flying to Minnesota to support this team. And we're going to have to win. Otherwise, I'm going to be real sad.
Yeah. I mean, Rutgers, I think that should be a layup game. I think Indiana could potentially give us a little bit of struggle. Minnesota should be a win for us. I think the only hurdle there is going to be Purdue. I think I agree with you there. But, you know, look, we've seen how good this team can play.
Yeah, I mean, and this is very surface. I haven't dug deep into all these teams, but if you're just making me look at a list of names and call it right now, that's how I see it, and I think that gets us there. And that might be all the wins we have because it's a murderer's row at the end of the season.
It really is. But I think this game against Penn State is going to play a big part of how we play over this stretch of games. If we win this game against Penn State, I think the momentum, the cloud nine that this team's going to be on carries us, and we could go on a five-game winning streak, and then we're sitting at seven wins, 7-2, going into the last three or four games of the year.
Well, if it's a five-game winning streak, it'd be 7-1. But, yeah. That's if we get six wins, I'm happy with this season. I know you predicted 7-8, so you're dragging it out. But if we go bowling in Loxley's first year, that's a success. Yeah. I don't care if we squeaked it in with a win over Michigan at home because we needed it late, or if we have to pull also a miracle on the road. However we get six wins this year, I'm happy with it.
Right. And in the latter half of the year, I mean, obviously we've got the Michigan and the Ohio State and the Michigan State game. We've got some really tough matchups there. To be able to pull one out of those three is going to be tough.
It's going to be very tough. So we need to get at least most of the way there in this stretch of games.
For sure. And now we got some things that we didn't get a chance to talk about much yet. I mean, some news around the recruiting front. I know you heard some things. One guy decommit, one guy committed.
Yeah, so we had a decommit. Decommit name is Jordan Mitchell. He's out of Georgia, three-star defensive end. He stated that it was due to the transfer portal and depth at that position. I'm not seeing a bunch of depth at that position, so I think he just wanted to feel like he was walking into a wide open position. So, and he wasn't, you know, I'm not going to disparage the kid. Any recruit's a good recruit because I want everybody coming to Maryland.
Of course.
But he didn't have any huge offers. This isn't like if Ruben walked away and I'm crying myself to sleep. So I wish the best for the kid. Whatever's best for his career, great. If we end up being what's best for him in November and he wants to early sign with us, best wishes, come on back. But really, he only had Service Academy offers and some mid-major offers. So we were pretty much the only major program he was looking at. So maybe somebody else come calling, but most likely he'll be in a scenario like that.
Well, we did get a commit over the weekend, though. A kid, or actually during the week, 6'3", 270-pound Trey Smith out of Frostburg, Maryland. This kid's gotten some pretty big attention from other colleges.
Yeah, he had offers from two of the teams we've already played, Temple and Syracuse. So, nice. You know, even though we lost to Temple, he still wanted to come see us. So, one of the things with his recruiting is that Mr. Ty Johnson apparently was a big reason that he decided to come here.
Okay.
Well, I'll pump my chest a little bit more about my predictions. I told you all at our offensive preview that Ty Johnson was going to take over the backfield with Kerryon to be a Johnson and Johnson backfield and get off that depth chart. And what happened? They cut Chris Anderson, and it's the Johnson and Johnson backfield, and I know all, and we're winning against Penn State.
I love it. It all comes back to us. Hey, look, we want to know what you guys think of everything. Let us know what you think is going to happen with this Penn State game. Let us know what you think is going to happen over the next 4 or 5 games. Make sure you hit us up. You can always send us an email at shellandtellpod@gmail.com. You can hit us up on Twitter. I'm at FredBLBS. Ryan's at TerpsBSpert. You can follow us on our social media podcast page. That's Shell and Tell Pod on Twitter and Shell and Tell Pod on Facebook. Make sure if you haven't hit subscribe yet on iTunes or Google Podcasts or Spotify, hit that subscribe button. That's how we get found. We appreciate you guys tuning in each and every week. As always, Ryan, sign us out of here.
Well, I know we got some big injuries out there with the kicker, and we're offensive linemen and Shaq Smith on the mend and Lolo Harrison on the mend. We're going to give this one more try. Till next time, guys. Here's wishing all is well under the shell.